Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. Lisa Anderson with you here. And later on for our inbox, we have a listener who has a tendency to see every woman he meets as a potential girlfriend or wife. And in fact, he's so nervous about it. He's got an upcoming conference and he doesn't want to just be meeting single women and putting them in this box. He wants to just relate to them normally. And so one of our counselors is going to hopefully give him some encouragement and advice. And then for our culture segment, the Bible tells us to be cheerful givers, but how can we be cheerful when we don't really have a lot to give and maybe we're in debt and maybe we're afraid of giving and we don't really trust God? Let's just be honest. So we're going to have a good conversation with Dean Sweetman, who's the founder of the Tithely app and a former pastor, and he's got a lot of just good advice on how we can go about doing that. Well, we're here for our roundtable, and as promised from last week, we're continuing our conversation about money and debt and saving and money practices. And so we're going to jump in with Diana, Jonathan, and Jay on our conversation right where we were. So listen in. John, like, you and your now wife literally paid off $80,000 in student loan debt in 3 years. Clearly, you have some strategies to help people as to how you got that done. Still wearing nice blazers. He has a nice blazer on today. So,
well, thank you. Uh-huh. And I love the way that you framed the question, what are those traps? And there's so many of them. And so I'm going to go back to that quote, that right thinking comes before right living. For me, the first thing that had to happen, I'm going to expand on what Diana was saying. It would take hours to talk about all the different things, but finding people who are good at money in your life, identifying who, and if you don't know anyone, go find someone. I would go to the church, or I'd see my friend's parents with someone that looks like they know what they're doing with money. Maybe you don't have to talk to them about marriage or something like that, but they know things about money. So go talk to them. And then the second thing I would say, the second strategy, which just very simply, is look at the numbers. So many people avoid listing out what they have, what they make versus what they owe. Mm-hmm. They just have this plastic and they just spend it, mm-hmm, because the TV tells them that you're nobody without the new iPhone or whatever it is. Right. And there's something so like cold water to the face, mm-hmm, of seeing that you only make X and you want to go out and buy Y.
Yeah.
And so if couples would just do that, if they would connect with someone who knows what they're talking about, and if they would go out and they would actually just look at the numbers. Mm-hmm. The numbers, math has a great way of not being your friend. Math has a great way of being very honest with you.
Yeah. So again, me being a liberal arts major, I would say my math on that is live below your means.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like, as long as you do that, you shouldn't be freaking out about anything. Okay, Jay, your entire career is in finance. So what would you say? You also are the parent of some young adults.
Yeah.
Maybe, I hope you haven't bailed them out of stuff.
No, actually, my kids are on a pretty good path.
Good.
And my oldest, my son, is working on his graduate degree, and he's married to a young gal who's working, and he's drawing a little bit of a research salary while he works through his degree. But I know from talking to them that they're watching their dollars, they're counting the money coming in and going out. Like you said, it's math, but it's more than math. It's behavior, and it's a little bit of psychology. These people that are trying to sell us things, they kind of know how to tug on our strings and say, oh, you need this or you need that. Or things are so easy in a credit card society. We can just buy it now and pay for it later. It's just that so often we're paying for it and paying for it and paying for it. Mm-hmm. And we're, you know, it's reverse from where things used to be. Maybe I'll date myself with this word, but a lot of your listeners probably aren't familiar with layaway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the idea that you used to say, hey, I want to buy this, and the store would hold it for you and you'd make payments, mm-hmm, was kind of that, maybe you'd say, forced savings plan. And then you, when you paid it off, you would get that thing at Christmas, mm-hmm, for your family, or you'd get the new vacuum or mixer or whatever. So, I mean, those things, that's something we've kind of gotten away from, and it's hard to delay, that delay of self-gratification.
Yeah. Yeah, it is hard. I would say, you know, and let's just do just a quick speed round here of other great great tips as well. You know, we started out by talking about how our parents didn't have certain options. And all of those options are basically convenience options. Mm-hmm. And so I think the first line of defense for you in getting rid of stuff is getting rid of convenience. Mm-hmm. So that is, I mean, I have a friend who worked at Starbucks. She said people literally come in three times a day and buy $5 drinks. $15 a day times 30 days a month. I don't even know what the math on that is, but it just is mind-boggling to me. So stop it, people. Just stop it. The other thing that just drives me bonkers is when people like will drink the bottled water in hotel rooms. I'm like, come on now. Let's just walk down to a water
room. It's true.
And those things are like $5.50.
Yes.
What in the world? Mm-hmm. I'm just like, that is so off limits for me. I mean, just stuff like that. Convenience. It, you know, Diana mentioned all the subscriptions. You know, I mean, if that's important to you, pick like one or two, but you don't have to have everything, or have your friends get the other ones and then you can go over to their place and do stuff. You know, some women are all about, like, you know, I had a friend who was just like, I get my nails done every week. And I'm like, okay, if that's going to be your priority, you better be able to pay for that. Because again, live below your means mm-hmm. and have that be your splurge. But you can't have 12 splurges, people, at least unless you're Justin Bieber. Okay. But I don't know. Other ideas. What do you guys think?
I think first and foremost, at least from my experience, is not making it about us. So like mm-hmm. what you're saying about not, you know, those are conveniences, mm-hmm. But what are things that are important? So to me, making a conscious decision to tithe off of my paycheck my before tax amount, not my after tax amount, and then picking an amount to put into savings, picking a percentage that mm-hmm. says, hey, I'm going to tithe at 10% and I'm going to put X amount in my savings. And then after that, that's what I've got to live below. Mm-hmm. And then from that, kind of figuring out what are those conveniences or needs. I mean, you've got to eat, so mm-hmm. groceries have to be on that list. Mm-hmm. But for me, those were two of the big things that made it easier when I was planning and looking at what I could or couldn't do and how to get financially healthy. Yeah. Those were my big ones.
Yeah, that's good.
I think about this, and so many people immediately will connect with, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so how do we bring in the emotional side that you spoke to and also the spiritual side? I would say that before you get to the rationale, you have to deal with those. So the first advice I would give is I would definitely agree with tithing. You definitely have to be aware, and it would take hours. But there's a quote that says, don't sacrifice what you want most for what you want now. I think it's a great idea. If you're able to sit down with a spouse, a partner, a parent, a good friend, and lay out what are those important things, that'll give you some emotional energy to say, I need to make good decisions here. Now, once again, spiritually, tithing, if you're listening and you're not a believer, you're going to have to trust us on this one. But the spiritual component's big. But then there's a big emotional component. Once you can identify, I really want X, maybe that's, you know, doing something for your parents or some dream vacation. I came from the retail world. I mean, we knew how you think. You talked about marketing. Well, the retail world is very trained in where to put things. We had information on demographics around us. Mm-hmm. I could move a table and sell $3,000 of an item because I know which direction you'll walk. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very intentional when you go into stores and saying, I'm going to consciously say no and not just think about myself. It's almost like a battle. Mm-hmm. You have to come into this thing intellectually, spiritually, and emotionally mm-hmm. if you're going to be successful.
Yeah, good point.
It seems like a lot of the biggest choices are between needs and wants, mm-hmm. like Diana was saying a little bit. And then now just borrow on John's, the idea of having a dream. So do I want this now or do I want something bigger later? If I have that dream, then I can kind of – it helps me to say no to things like doing my nails every week. As opposed mm-hmm. to saying, hey, I want to save for that big trip, or I have a family thing coming up. You know, next year my daughter's graduating from college. So we've already kind of scoped out places to stay, how much it's going to cost. We're planning for that trip, you know, and just making those advanced decisions, maybe denying some of those little things now, the Starbucks, so that I can go and celebrate that big time with family. And that success of my daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Well, and it's so true, Jay, what you're saying about that, because I remember, again, I think there are like season appropriate, you know, places to be and how to feel about that. I think so much around spending and debt is shame-based, and there are great feelings of shame around that. And I remember thinking, you know, like I said about, I had a season in my 20s where I had to live with my parents and where I temped because I could not get hired somewhere. And I had to say to my peers who had graduated from the same school and whatever, yeah, I'm still looking, I'm still, but I had to be okay with that because mm-hmm. that was my reality, you know, and it was hard. And it was, you know, and one of my great sadnesses, I can't remember if I've said this on the show before, but one of my sadnesses was that my dad died before I like mm-hmm. ever really landed, you know. Mm-hmm. I just kind of mm-hmm. one time he was just like, are you even employable? Because I was so all over the map, and just bless his heart, I think he was just hoping I'd go mm-hmm. somewhere. But mm-hmm. anyway, but just thinking that through, and I think, yeah, if you're in your 30s and you're in that position, that's even harder. And mm-hmm. if you've lost a job and you have to go backwards, mm-hmm. so to speak, that's hard. But mm-hmm. Let's talk, John, I want to circle back to you, because, you know, having that huge amount of debt looming in front of you, talk about your feelings around that, because I think you were married at that point when you realized something has to happen mm. here. I cannot go back and repeat the assumptions and patterns of my childhood. Mm. And so talk us through the process of how you actually attacked that debt and what you and your wife had to talk about in the midst of that.
You want the feelings and the tactics. I'm going to go back to it. If you're not willing, for those of you listening, if you're not willing to change how you think, you will never change your life. The feeling, I don't know if you've ever felt just unsure about basic necessities. You know, in the neighborhood that I grew up in, I had cars stolen. I had various things happen. And nothing will get your attention like the feeling of not having enough food or anywhere to live. Mm-hmm. It is very hard to describe. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to describe. And there were so many years where you have so many questions. There are so many years where you're so angry and yet you're so sad. And you look at people who are driving these cars, and you see people doing things with their parents. Mind you, as I said, my parents stayed together. They worked very, very hard. They had their own challenges. I love my parents very much. And I would look over the fence and I would say, I wonder what it would be like. I wonder what it would be like if I was able to get, you know, there were a number of years where there's nothing for Christmas, to take one example, right? So the kids come to school and they say, oh, wasn't that so awesome, right? Or they talk about how mom and dad's going on a trip, or they talk about this and this, you know, and I was wearing sweatpants to my football game practices and selling hot dogs to make things happen and things. And you learn from those things that it's very challenging. And so the tactic that my wife and I took is we came together and we said, this is how much we have to spend on our debt per month if we're going to get out of this thing in less than 20 years. And so what do we need to cut to do that? So we need to live on a shoestring budget as far as our groceries, as far as our utilities. So my wife and I began to do everything manually. We found a place in a less than desirable neighborhood, very less than desirable, to the point where people worried about our safety. But we did that. And then after that, because you could get it cheap, you know, even though you weren't sure how the landlord was still a free person. And then you looked around and you found other expenses. So my wife and I began to make all the food from scratch. We had a big 50-pound bag of flour and rice in the kitchen, and I would work on the cars. I changed the brakes, and my wife did our hair. And, you know, we shopped at Goodwill, and we, you know, we didn't do the fancy stuff. And slowly the number came down, and slowly the number came down. And there's so many people who are focused on keeping up with the Joneses, mm-hmm. right? Like you mm-hmm. said, they're trying to look the part and smell the part. We were just trying to get out. We were mm-hmm. just trying to be free of the debt. And so payment after payment, mm-hmm. you started to feel a little bit better. And to the point where just in student loans, I was looking at the number this morning, because that number involves a lot of things, but just in student loans, to see the Great Lakes write you a letter and saying, wow, you're almost out. They actually do that. They actually wow. they actually notify you when you're cool. almost out of their prison. So
yeah,
that was
that's
exciting.
Cool. I'm surprised they do that. I'm surprised they don't say, here are a few other things you can buy.
Oh, they try yeah. that too.
That must have been so encouraging to get that mm-hmm. letter.
Mm-hmm. It is.
That's awesome.
It is.
Okay, so, but now that brings up a question of, okay, so you pay off that debt, you're out. A lot of people would say, we're free, let's go buy a bunch of stuff, let's go. What did you do to maintain, and ensure that you did not get back into debt? What are some of the habits that you have still kept? Mm. Hopefully you got out of this super scary neighborhood at some point. I mean, we'll see. Or else you just, you know, you just made it awesome, whatever. Right. But what does that look like, you know, not going off the rails and in the opposite direction and being like, okay, now we have all this money and we can just do what we want with it?
Great question. And how do you act now that you're no longer shackled? And I think that for us, because we allowed our thinking to change, that means we changed. Mm-hmm. We're not those lottery winners who inherit a bunch of money, but we haven't learned any skills. Mm-hmm. We actually know how to identify needs versus wants. Mm-hmm. We know how to enjoy the simple things in life. And so we have a plan. We have a plan for paying off the house. We've got a plan for the next steps. So we're just, people ask us, aren't you guys going to go celebrate in, you know, the Bahamas and get back in debt or something?
Well, first of all, people do, right?
First of all, debt's a curse word. second of all, no, we don't need that. My wife is this amazing woman, and she tells people, she says, I couldn't imagine living any other way. She said, this has been such a fun adventure. Mm-hmm. So that's how we did it. We became somebody else.
That's so cool. And I mean, that obviously took, I mean, again, like you said, you can hear the discipline and the strategy in that of like, there were actual things that had to happen. This wasn't just like, let's think and pray hard enough about it and hopefully it'll just come to us easily.
Right.
There actually are sacrifices that have to be made. But so let's talk through a few other things just for the person that's like, okay, you know, maybe they have school debt, maybe they have consumer debt, maybe they have whatever. And they're just like, okay, it is now the new year. I need to do something. What are some of those other things that they could be doing?
Well, if I can just talk to the ladies specifically for a minute. It seems like a lot of single women that I know have a really hard time imagining themselves as financially free or capable of living in a certain way because they're not married. And so in the new year, I would take the opportunity to reject that. Not to say that you're rejecting your desire to be married, but that you are rejecting the stigma that you have to be married in order to live a certain way. Mm-hmm. I made a choice to enjoy my singleness. And should the Lord provide the opportunity for me to get married, then absolutely, I would be excited for that. But this is the season in life that I'm in right now. Mm-hmm. So what are things that I can do to thrive in that? And so I made the choices. I made the choices to, hey, you know what? I want to buy a house. The rental market in Colorado Springs is ridiculous. So if I'm going to pay that, let me invest into a mortgage. I wanted to go to Israel to Jay's point, that dream of planning something. Okay, so let me work that out. What does that look like? And I have the freedom to do that. I'm not buying groceries for two people or more. Or, you know, reframe, I guess what I'm trying to say is just reframe your mindset as a single woman. Mm-hmm. You have so many opportunities to give and to invest and to learn and to grow, to become healthy, not just financially, but spiritually and emotionally and mentally before you do enter into a relationship. Mm-hmm. And that makes the opportunity to date and to plan a wedding so much easier and less stressful because you're not worried about all of these other things in your life that might be holding you back.
And I would say, just to add to that, you know, the go in with a mentality that, one, you're not going to look to marriage to rescue you from your horrible financial choices that you're now going to make. And guys, too, on the converse of that, don't treat your single years as just some kind of like living off the set of Entourage or something. And then when you get married, then you're going to clean up your act and start getting stuff together, because you got to form those habits early. You got to make it happen. I mean, I think that's important. So those are good thoughts. Thanks. What other ideas would we have?
Well, even just from the practical stuff, do you bring your lunch to work or do you go out every day? Because that's a big change.
Tricky.
And
that's not only a financial decision, that's a time management decision. Because I think a lot of people are just like, I'm not prepared. I'm just going to have to go get some lunch, you know, whatever. I see that among this generation a lot, and me and younger. Yeah.
Yeah. You talked about coffee. I make coffee at home and bring it in with me in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple coworkers that make their coffee at their desk. So we're not stopping at Starbucks. We're kind of saying, how do I get coffee? How do I get something like that? And do it on a cheaper basis.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think just a couple other things I was thinking of, too. This harkens a little bit back to what Diana was saying. Don't be ashamed if you are in a season of life where you need to, or even you don't need to, have a roommate. Mm-hmm. I lived for 13 years on my own in a house that I had bought. Mm-hmm. And because of, you know, you boundless peeps know this story, because of caregiving for my mom, one of my best friends and I moved in together. My mom is with Jesus, mm-hmm. and my roommate and I decided to stay roommates. Mm-hmm. I can't even tell you how often I have to explain that. Like, why are you living together? Y'all, like, you're 20 years old and just in college or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Because we have a big enough place that we each have our own space. We are sharing, you know, we went in on it as an investment. We share HOA dues. We share utilities. This is just cheaper, people. Mm-hmm. It's just a good decision. And that's me not being in debt and not being, you know, mm-hmm. making a good salary and stuff. So I think it's okay. And if you have to explain it away, just do it, you know, because I think that's it can be a wise thing to do. And then the other thing I would say is think of, I think a lot of financial experts think through this too. Think of ways to create more income. So I know when Dave Ramsey's Anthony O'Neill was here on the show, I basically blew his mind, people, okay? Because I came up with the idea of selling your stuff. Like, I have just started going on eBay and whatever, mm-hmm. and I'm just like an aspiring minimalist. And I'm like, I've got all this stuff. Let me just sell it or give it away. Mm-hmm. I love doing that too. If I hear someone who needs something and I've got something sitting around, I'm like, yeah, hold that because I got it for you. Mm-hmm. It's just a blast to be able to do that and just lighten your load of stuff. Mm-hmm. So selling stuff, you may want to freelance something if you've got a skill or grab a side job or something. I mean, just even short term, you know, I mean, yeah, don't freak yourself out or, you know, go into burnout over it and stuff. But sometimes you can make extra money doing something you love that maybe is not part of your current job. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fun thing to do as well. So, all right. So because this is the front end of the year, let's close it out just by giving kind of some hope to our audience, maybe like immediate steps that they can start taking. What you think would be the biggest takeaway for someone who, you know, I mean, think of both the person who's just drowning in debt, the person who knows they need to make some better stewardship choices, the person who wants to give extravagantly, which I think is a huge blessing when you get to that point. The fact that I have a roommate has given me a lot more expendable income, and I love being able to find a lady at church and pay for her women's retreat, or someone who can't do something and just be able to step in and be that person who can do it. It is just a super blast. So it's something to be able to look forward to. But what would be some other hopeful things moving forward for folks to consider?
Well, I really like what Diana said earlier about paying yourself. The phrase I use is paying yourself first. Mm-hmm. So setting some money aside out of your paycheck before you get it. Mm. And then you can start to build up a fund of money that'll allow you to pay down debt or even have some money set aside for that unexpected car repair or a birthday gift that you didn't plan on or anything else, so that you aren't going back into the debt or using a credit card to pay for something unexpected. Because mm-hmm. we all know we're going to get a flat tire now and then, or you're going to have to change the water pump on your car or who knows what else. But if you start to plan ahead for some of those things and build up an emergency fund, then you are providing yourself a way out of debt, and you're kind of, that emergency fund can become, you know, a vacation fund too. If mm-hmm. you could split it up and use it for different things and follow that dream.
Yeah, that's good.
My question is, how badly do you want to have financial freedom? For those of you, whether you're driving or at home, how badly do you want to be able to not be stressed about if you have enough money or you're not able to get gifts? How badly do you want to be in a position to be free financially? And what that's going to require is for you to change how you think. Mm-hmm. And so I have one challenge. If you really want to be in a place where you no longer have to worry about money, are you willing to just find someone that is doing well financially and just connect to them? Take them out for coffee mm-hmm. or just meet with them at the park, go for a walk and talk to them and say, I don't currently think about money the right way. Mm-hmm. And I can tell that you know things that I don't. How do I gain some of that knowledge? If you will do just that, if you will commit yourself to someone else's train of thought who has demonstrated some competency with finances, that'll be a huge step because we can't cover it all here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just bouncing off of both of those things, I think that the biggest thing is just to make a conscious decision, mm-hmm. To make that choice that says, yes, I want to be financially healthy. I want to make better financial decisions, to be a good steward. And when you make that choice, then hold yourself to it. And it's hard. Peer pressure, you know, hey, friends are going out. Let's all go out and let's get appetizers and drinks and a meal and learning how to say no and being okay with that. And then watching how your friends respond as you get to a point where you did buy a house or you're buying a new car or you're taking a dream vacation and you're doing it without the financial burden of debt. And you will start becoming the one who is the peer pressurer. And you begin to build healthy relationships. So I think all of that is just making a choice, making a decision and saying, this is what I want to do.
Yep. And I would just add to that, think in terms of not straight up numbers and what you have to spend, but think of it as a stewardship issue. I was hesitant to share this example, but I'm going to share it. So I have to buy a car in the next couple of weeks. My car is literally getting too expensive to fix. I've driven that thing for 13 years now. And I have enough to buy that car outright. So I'm going to buy a new car because I've saved up. But I am still, and it's funny to me because I have some friends who know like what my job is and know what, and they're like, oh my goodness, I saw this like Lexus SUV. I saw this whatever. And I'm like, absolutely not. I do not need that kind of car. Mm-hmm. Maybe for some people, like that's their ultimate thing, but I'm going to go in and buy a reliable car that is going to get me places that I'm hopefully not going to have to buy another car for a while, but I do not need all this crazy business in it and whatever. And so it's just I need to make that choice of this is the car that I can use and I can be okay with and, you know, whatever. And so anyway, all that to say, there are great choices that we can make and be empowered to do that and really trust God in the process, I think. So thanks, you guys. Great discussion.
Thanks for having
us.
Thank you. Some people gotta lose it all to find out what they really want. Some people gotta lose it all to find out what they really want. What I want is you. Some people gotta lose what it all. What I want is you. I can't live what I want is you. Some people gotta lose what it all. What I want is you. I can't live what I want is you. Some
Well, folks, we are here for our culture segment, and since we are kicking off the new year, it's a great time to talk about money. And I know a lot of you are just like stressed when we get into money conversations, and we've had conversations around budgets, around debt, around all kinds of things that affect you where you are in your life right now. And one other angle to this conversation is the subject of giving. Now, lest you just flatline here or, turn off the show or whatever, I want you to know that I have got Dean Sweetman here. Not only is he a former pastor for many years, but he's also CEO of Your Giving Inc. and the creator of a really cool app. Dean, I want to welcome you to the show and say the app, I mean, do you actually call it like Tithely? Is that how you call it?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Thanks, Lisa. Great to be with you.
Great to have you.
We have a bunch of products, for local churches. And, kind of giving was our claim to fame with a really simple giving experience via an app. So I remember, going to Starbucks about 6 years ago and putting a credit card inside the Starbucks app. And I bought a coffee and I thought, wow, this is going to be a thing. So we developed a giving app that you could do the same thing, but give to your church.
Okay. Well, it's not that many, you don't fit the stereotype of the pastor who also being so technologically savvy, I think our audience is just going to be like, oh man, this is awesome. I want to hear from this guy. So
thank you.
Way to be up on it. Okay. So I want to start out because you know, just having a general conversation about giving to start, like I said, we're in a new year. We very much encourage, young adults, you know, through the Boundless Show to say, this is your chance to proactively grow up, take ownership of your life, take ownership of your faith, you know, don't keep blaming your parents or relying on your parents and stuff. And giving to the Lord is not only biblical, it is a grown-up thing to do. And I think we give a lot of people, you know, we give ourselves and others a pass on this because we're just like, well, life is so hard and we've got so much going on and I'm underemployed and I've got all this school debt. But really it's a blessing in the sense of biblically, in fact, our producer Tammy and I were talking about this and she was reminding me of that meme where, Jesus is trying to get the little girl to give up her little teddy bear because he has a gigantic one behind his back and she's just so reluctant to do it. I mean, that might be an illustration. Actually, I don't know if she got that from you or where, but she was telling me about that and I was like, yeah, that's so true. And it's so difficult for all the trusting God language that we have and what it means to give and how God blesses givers and stuff. Why would you say, where's the disconnect happening in the church today?
So let's come back just a one notch there. So you talked about the trust factor.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the platform that I begin whenever I'm talking to someone about generosity, giving, sacrificial giving, tithing, offerings, or, you know, that whole bundle, right, of conversation, is I think it has to come back to a couple things. First would be, you know, we trust God with our eternity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you think about it, you know, those of us that have come to believe in Jesus as Lord and Savior, we're literally having faith and believing not just the message of the gospel, but our eternity. Mm-hmm. We're trusting God. So if we can trust God with our eternity, how can we not trust God with our finance, given that money is so temporary?
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of start getting people in perspective. You're putting your whole life in God's hands, including your eternal soul. Let's have that conversation about letting God into an area. And quite honestly, I believe the whole sacrificial giving system that's in the Bible, God didn't set up for his own need. He set it up for our need, and that was to get ourselves out of the way of, you know, relying on ourselves for our possessions and all this stuff, even our job and our career, and putting God first. And if you can put God first with your finance, everything else really is downhill and easier from there.
Yeah. And I like what you said. I mean, bringing eternity into play, because it's so easy, you know, especially for 20-somethings, young adults, to just feel like, yeah, eternity is a long ways away. I've just got to do my life right now. I can't worry about that. But there's so much.
Well,
I mean,
as you know, as you go on in life and as you get older, I mean, you know, I'm 55. I just turned 55. And the years go by a lot quicker than when I was 25, that's for sure.
Yeah, but it's interesting because biblically, what we invest in eternally is what will last and what will matter. And so really, investing in eternal things, even though we're going to clutch on to stuff and it's a faith step and we're going to be fearful about it, that's where the impact is at, and that's where the ultimate reward is at. So I love that. Okay, well, let's kind of juxtapose that with the whole idea of a cheerful giver. Because again, you know, someone who's not giving anything right now, I don't know. Yep. God could do a huge work, but I'm suspecting that this person isn't going to be like, oh my goodness, after this one interview, I am now just turning over. You know, we talk a little bit about cart before the horse and this idea of being a cheerful giver. And a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm not really into it and I'm not really being cheerful, so I probably shouldn't give until my attitude catches up with me. I'm guessing you would think that's probably wrong thinking.
Yeah, because everything we do in our life is by faith. You know, we every step in Christ is a faith step. And if you want to grow, you know, if you're a newer believer or you came to Christ, you know, in college maybe through a campus ministry or as a young adult, you know, you find yourself in a local church and grow, it's a faith step every step of the way. And then, you know, you start looking at your Christian experience to grow, and you maybe you get, you know, you get water baptized, and you start going to a discipleship class, and little by little, the parts of your character and the parts of, you know, what God wants to mold, he starts to speak to you about, and you start giving up things, and you start not saying things a certain way, and your attitude begins to shift. It's all a faith journey. Mm-hmm. And I would just say that the journey of becoming a generous believer is a faith journey as well. And it's one that I always tried to describe as pick a starting point. You know, 10% is a big jump from zero. So I always used to, you know, say, and still do, why don't you start with something? And if you've never been involved in giving to your local church or even to, you know, a local charity or ministry, just start small. And once that habit develops and you start to see the blessings in your life, that's when you can grow. And I believe how you grow in your generosity is commensurate with how you grow actually in your faith in God, because I think they're both connected.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've totally seen that. In fact, I've told the story on the show here of back in my early 20s, you know, I was all stressed out about money. And I remember writing a check to put in the offering and knowing that if they deposited it, I would not make my rent. And I was like, right. Well, I don't know. That's not very responsible. So maybe I better not do it. And I just felt like God was like, you just do it. Okay. And so I did.
Yeah. I think it's always a combo of obedience.
Yeah.
Right. To the scriptures and what you're being taught. And then, you know, and I'm sure, and then you said it right up front, you know, you talk about budgeting and being practically responsible with your finance. I think that's a big part of this whole conversation. Living within a budget. You know, I always taught and lived by the 10-10-80. You know, I would give 10%, save 10%, and live on 80%. Mm. And I think if you can learn to live on 80% of your income when you're young, and you bring that, you know, right through your life, you're going to be a millionaire.
Yeah.
Because if you save 10% of your income for when you start your job, you know, in your 20s, and you do that for the rest of your life to the time you're 60, you're going to have millions of dollars saved if you invest it, you know, wisely. So it's a combination of, you know, practical wisdom with how I use and deal with money, to trusting God, you know, on the generosity side of things, and really just expecting God to fulfill his word.
Yeah. And what I think so interesting about that is, incidentally, my rent check did bounce because I didn't have the money in my account. So rather than thinking, you know, in some weirdo prosperity thing like, oh, well, I'm going to be faithful in this, so God's going to drop $1 million in my account and it's going to be all good. What it did was I survived that. It was okay. It didn't like crush me. And what it did is it started cultivating habits to be like, you know what? I can make that gift. I can. And next time, you know, maybe I'll do it so my rent doesn't bounce, and I'll find creative ways to do that. So it was a growing experience and a good thing ultimately. Okay. Now do talk to us a little bit, because I think there's a lot of, you know, not all of us just can sit down for coffee with our pastor and be like, hey, tell me about the church's finances and where are they right now? Right. What's going on? Give us a little inside scoop from the other side of the aisle from a pastor's perspective of how do they pray through the church's finances, what it looks like, what they're hoping, what would they love for their parishioners to know when it comes to the gift of giving for their own church?
What a great question. So, you know, and I know our audience today may be a little younger, and there's a couple of things that I think that are going on in kind of the, you know, this 21 to 35 age bracket. You know, most times, millennials want to give to things that they effectively see are going to bring some kind of change. You know, the step of giving to the local church is a big leap. From the pastor's perspective, there's a couple of things that are going on. And I'm talking about a true shepherd, right? There's, you know, we've all known stories of kind of churches, perhaps, and ministries that haven't handled money in a biblical way. But on the broad spectrum, most church leaders have a shepherd's heart. They want to care for God's people. And so there's always a tension between bringing the truth, right? And I always, you know, think that whenever you're talking about finance, you start from scripture. You start from what the Bible teaches. And that gives you, as a, you know, as a teacher of God's word, a platform to not hide behind, you know, people's prejudices or their insecurities. You just preach what the Bible says. So coming from a scriptural place as a church leader, I think that's the beginning. But then there's the tension of, you know, you're worried about talking about money. And, you know, it's like you're really, there's that shepherd's heart in you that doesn't want people to feel burdened or obliged or coerced, right? And the Bible talks very clearly about that. You know, we're supposed to teach and talk about giving so it comes out of a generous heart from the giver. And so I think if pastors kind of can come with that attitude, I'm going to teach you the Bible, but also from the hearer, you know, this isn't about you feeling burdened and kind of some sense of obligation. It's out of a cheerful sense of obedience that you're wanting to get involved in something that's unnatural, right? Giving your security away, giving your money away. This is not a natural thing for humans to think about. But as you make that journey, it grows and grows and grows and really becomes a big part of your development as a believer.
Yeah. So a lot of times, though, Dean, I know like a young adult may say, okay, but like giving to my local church isn't super sexy. Like, I don't want to just keep the lights on and be paying salaries and whatever. There are a lot of great charities or other things that I'm like super into I'd rather give to. Why should a young adult really consider giving to their local church, the local body of believers that they're a part of?
Yeah, so there's a spiritual aspect to this. So, you know, and Jesus talked a lot about sowing and reaping. And in the New Testament, we understand, I believe that when we give in a church setting, we're actually giving to God. I think we're trusting God with our finance. We're giving to Jesus as the head of the church. What's Jesus' focus? To build the church. Mm-hmm. The local church is the hope of the world. If that's the truth, we know that local, strong, healthy, not necessarily big, size doesn't really matter, but healthy, strong, community-focused outreach in a local church is the answer for all the things that are going wrong in our society. So as Christians who believe that, and maybe that's an issue, maybe you've got people who are kind of struggling with, wow, is church really the answer? Well, church in itself isn't the answer. Jesus is the answer. But Jesus is the head of the church, and hopefully his body can reflect who he is, who our head and chief visionary is. But when you understand that you're contributing to Christ in a local church setting, you are strengthening that local church to be able to fulfill its main mission. Now, we do. Who doesn't love helping the poor? We're commanded to do it. Who doesn't love providing food and shelter for the homeless? The Bible commands us to do that, obviously. So that's something that we want to do. But to be able to come from a position of strength and have a beacon in a community that can be that point of light and point of hope and you know, for the local community, that is what the local church has been created for. Mm. And so with Jesus as our head, building a strong local church by contributing, and we can take the analogy of, you know, where am I being fed? Where am I spiritually growing? Where am I, you know, iron sharpening iron, where am I growing in my faith? That's going to happen more than likely in a great local church setting. And so giving back into that field, as it were, allows me, the growing Christian, to partake of the fruit of that ministry, that church. And then by me contributing, I've got this beautiful sowing and reaping loop going on where I'm supporting what my local church is doing and I'm growing in my faith as well.
Yeah, that's cool. And I know, I mean, we say it all the time here at Boundless and the Boundless Show, we want you to be giving to the church right where you are, first and foremost.
Right.
And in fact, if you're not giving to your church and you're not involved in your church where they are up real life in your business, in your life, discipling you, whatever, you know, that needs to be a priority. And not that we don't, I mean, we're in a new year here, you know, boundless.org, click on donate. We want, you know, we love for you to donate to Boundless too, but don't do it at the expense of your church, because that great ministry is being done there right in your community. community. Okay, well, let's talk tech for a couple minutes. I'm going to preface this by saying, like, you're basically talking to, you know, you're giving Inc. and Tidely and stuff. This is your jam. I mean, these are your people. These are the people who are like, is there any more awesome way to give than through an app where it's just like, bam. But then we talk to, like, our parents and grandparents who are like, that sounds so sterile, and that's not spiritual, mm-hmm. and that's Jesus didn't use apps. And so talk to us about some of the benefits of just electronic giving and how it really can kind of infuse, you know, a great vibe into getting your giving. I love not thinking about, I mean, there are elements of my giving that I don't think about because I do my tithe electronically. I love that.
Right. Automatic, right?
My pastor says every week, he uses the verbiage, we are giving you, he says to the Lord, we're giving your tithes and our offerings. So the tithes are the Lord. They're not even our business. Yeah. We just give them up. Yeah. And then offerings on top of that, we can give. And I love being freed up to give randomly to all kinds of different things I love. But I think electronic giving so plays into that. So talk to us a little bit about how you found a sweet spot in that place.
Yeah, there's a revolution going on just in the area of, think about mobile commerce. And, you know, 60-70% of Amazon's shopping is going to be from a mobile phone. So you think about what we do now with, like, Uber, what we do with different merchants, right? So we've installed apps on our phone. We've put credit debit cards inside those apps. And then we seamlessly make purchases or, in this case, make a donation. So the whole world for churches is changing dramatically. Some churches are very at the forefront of this. There are some that, you know, don't even know they need it yet. But in 2 or 3 years, they'll work out that they will. And, you know, we'll be there to care for them and look after them and make sure they have a great system set up. But, you know, the mobile giving environment does a couple of really great things. It gives you the ability to give anywhere, anytime. So as a pastor, you want everyone to be in church on Sunday, but that doesn't happen. People are busy. And so having the ability for someone to give via their phone any time they want is really powerful. And then the other thing that really is a game changer that increases giving for churches is the ability to easily set up recurring giving. Mm-hmm. And so those couple of things, you know, as far as if you're a donor and you want to, you know, let's say you've kind of advanced beyond this, should I do this? You're now in this zone of, I want to be obedient. I'm going to start small. I'm going to start giving. I want to make a regular contribution to my church. I mean, it's so easy to be able to just pop an app open and get it all set up. And to your point, set and forget. On the Sunday, when you're in the service, you know, I always, you know, kind of taught that the giving moment is a really solemn, worshipful moment. And so whether you're giving by cash and check, and you'd be surprised, Lisa, how many baby boomers are switching from cash and check and going to digital. It's obviously the under 35 crowd do it without thinking because they don't know what, you know, checkbooks are. My kids don't know what a checkbook is. But, you know, older people are doing it as well. But the thought of in that moment, doesn't matter how you gave. In the Old Testament, they were bringing animals and seeds, right? In the New Testament, they're bringing shekels and gold. You know, in the 21st century, we have, you know, credit debit cards and ACH direct from our bank accounts. To God, it doesn't really matter how it comes. It's the heart behind the gift. And once we come into that kind of solemn, worshipful moment, you can hold your phone in your hand, you can hold an envelope in your hand, you can hold that money in your hand, and just in a prayerful, worshipful way, release that into the hands of Jesus. And so, but digital and mobile first giving is really, we're still at the dawn of it. I could bore you with a lot of statistics on what's going on in that whole space, but it's needless to say, there's a big shift going on, and we're excited to be a part of it.
Yeah. Well, and I think so much of it comes down to just looking around, seeing what God is involved in, and having the joy of being part of that. You know, I referenced on the front end, 2 Corinthians 9:7, God loves a cheerful giver. Cheerful actually comes from the Greek word that we get the English word hilarious from. And so we can give with hilarity in the new year. And I think, again, there are real rewards to that and real dividends that God is very serious serious about, and he doesn't mess around. He blesses those who give joyfully and out of what he has already given them. So I think that's super cool. So many more places we could go, but we'll wrap it there, and we'll make sure people know where they can find you, because we're at the end of the interview and you can't hang up on me now. I just want to say something unrelated and awkward, and that is you're kind of a young, not so eccentric doppelganger for Elton John. I'm just going to be honest in your photos.
Really?
with the glasses. I'm just being honest.
My wife chose those glasses, so yeah. I've been told I look like a few different people, but I've never had Elton John. But you know what? I love his music, and I've been to many concerts of his. So it's an entertaining concert, that's for sure.
And I'm sure that you are a songwriter and pianist, just like he is, with those kind of musical talents.
I was a youth leader like 40 years ago, and I had to learn to play guitar. So when I was youth pastoring, it was a little musical, but retired since.
Awesome. Well, Dean, thanks so much for your insight, and we love what you're doing and your commitment to the local church through giving, and we just really appreciate the conversation today.
Thanks for having me, Lisa. God bless. You got a love with your life, like a fire burning strong, till the night is coming gone. There's a hope that lives in you. You got a love with your life, like a warrior fight, lay it on the line. If you want to see it change, you got
As we finish out the show, we're going to open up our inbox, as we always do, and we have Counselor Patrick Hill here to answer this week's question. Hey, Patrick.
Hey there.
Wonderful to have you.
Great to be here.
Okay, one of our guys wrote in, and he says, I have this tendency to see every girl I meet as a potential girlfriend or wife, and it's extremely overwhelming. Not a very healthy thing. I already have some girls I'm interested in, but then I'm also going to conference this year that will have a lot of single girls at it, some of which I'll probably be networking with as part of the conference. I'm likely to find myself seeing them this way as well. Scripture teaches us to view each other as brothers and sisters, and that's what I want to do, but it can be difficult sometimes. Any advice? Mm.
Yeah, so the Lord has created us in his wisdom, built for relationships. So having relationship with others is a good thing. Now, this seems to be a bit misdirected, misguided, almost idolatrous, if you will, objectifying the women, seeing them as a potential X, whatever that X is, to fulfill, bring fulfillment into my life. So I guess I'd want to dig into what's behind the desire for a mate. Is there another hole there that needs to be filled that can only be filled with a relationship with our Creator? So that's kind of where I'd want to start. I'd want to start with, what's the relationship with God look like today? And then consider this culture that we're in, where there's this need, this seeming love addiction, if you will, this desire for a mate above all else. It's almost the fear of missing out that we're dealing with, looking at Facebook friends, et cetera, seeing how happy they are. So we need that. We think we need that in our lives. When we start off with a relationship with the Lord, though, all of our other relationships are going to take form and take shape. So regarding guidance and advice, definitely would advise this writer to take a step back, truly captivate what his calling is as a child of the King, and to find his identity first in God, and then see if through the Lord's lens he's able to see these women more as sisters rather than potential lifelong relationships.
Yeah. Now, how would you advise him in not moving to the opposite extreme where we have many of our guys writing in about that? Well, I'm too passive, or I'm just trying to be friends with everyone. Because, you know, we know Proverbs 18:22 says he who finds a wife. So there should be some intent there, some level of proactive behavior. But how can he do that without, again, obsessing?
Yeah, again, it's gonna really go by what's his walk with the Lord look like. So Psalm 37 talks about when we commit our ways to the Lord, and our desires then become His desires. Therefore, we kind of take on the heart of God, and we're able then to have a little bit more balance in our lives, so that we're not just running out as quickly as we can to find that mate for a lifelong connection, worried that we're going to miss something. Rather, we're content first in our walk with the Lord, and then allowing Him to open up those avenues for appropriate relationships. But yeah, sometimes we set our expectations either way too high or way too low because we're afraid of missing out.
Mm, good point. Yeah. Well, folks, that is it for this week's show. As always, we love to have you in our sphere, and especially now that we're in a new year, one thing that we would love for you to do is hop over to Apple Podcasts and give a review for the show so that other people can find us, because if you're enjoying it, we would love other people to be part of the Boundless family as well. So just go over to Apple Podcasts, look for The Boundless Show, and leave us a review. We would really appreciate it. That's it for this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.